I'll go ahead and call us to order for our regularly scheduled Board of Health meeting, Tuesday, April 7th. First item on our agenda is the consent agenda, and the only two items on there are approval of today's agenda and approval of last meeting minutes.
I'll move. Second.
I have a motion and a second. Are there any additions or corrections to the minutes? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Consent agenda passes. Public forum. This is a time for members of the public to offer comments concerning matters not scheduled to be heard before the Board of Health. Not seeing a rush towards the microphone. We'll move on to agency and departmental reports. Youth and Shelter Services. Everybody's favorite, Denise Denton. George has trained you well.
He really has.
Because he loads us up every time he comes to. Sure,
thing.
We can just pass. Well, yeah, you can pass out the extras.
Anyway, I brought you a few things that have come my way here recently that I think are of interest. One of those is the Kids Count, and I don't know if you're familiar with Kids Count. It's done through the Annie Casey Foundation and Iowa Child and Family Policy. They put out a Kids Count every year where they look at all 99 counties and look at various indicators from infant death to how many people are involved in WIC to high school graduation to teen death, suicides, and they've been doing this for years. So one of the very nice parts about it is you can look at all 99 counties all at once. You can look at Story counties and compare and see how much better we are than, say, Johnson County or any other county for that matter. Or how maybe we're not doing as well. And what is the nice part about that is then you can call Johnson County and say, why are we so much better than you? And they can give us an excuse. But they also, I think within that one, give a couple years. So you can look back and look at trends. Every once in a while, they'll put one out that looks at maybe 3 or 4 years at once. But these come out every year, and I thought you might want to be familiar with those because they are all issues that speak to health and look specifically at Story County. I don't know who gathers all their information. I'm just glad I'm not them. But it is, I think, very useful data that can be applied to almost any department that we have at the county level. I also brought you a new brochure that was recently put out by the Office of Drug Control Policy on cannabis products, cannabis oils, and cannabis solids, concentrates is what they're calling them. I had a copy of this before, but they were giving this out at the governor's conference on substance abuse last week where the keynote speaker spoke to this very thing and some of the data that's coming out of Colorado and some of the things that we can learn from that. And there's quite a bit we can learn from that. The other thing that I gave you is the handout that we have been circulating around Story County. I believe in February I told you that we had invited Linda Kalin to be a speaker at Iowa State, and that was last Monday. So in preparation of that, all my many magic elves, my Health Promotion Club and the Theta Chi Fraternity and the Mayor's Youth Committee, all groups, youth groups that were involved in sponsoring this, circulated these throughout the county to the tune of probably 2,000. It was a 1-2 punch wait. And the first was a save the date that on the back had all the instructions, one of those sides that speaks to how do you dispose of safely any of your over-the-counter medications or prescription medications. And then on the second wave, it was what she was talking about was the synthetic drugs. And then in the meantime, last week when she came, we had about 450 people in the Great Hall, which we were very pleased with that. They each, to get in the room, my students were handing them out going, you have to have this. Didn't tell them any differently. We put both of those informational on this 1-2 punch, so we were able to distribute almost another 500 of those. So hoping that can make a difference, because even though people maybe didn't come to that, we wanted to make sure that the flip side of the save the date was something that would be educational and useful for them. So even though they didn't attend, they could still get the information. So that's what that yellow sheet is some of the educational information that we gave them. Another couple of things that are happening as we speak, the Team Maze is going on in Boone, and I called over right before I came and said, what is the head count? And if every seventh grader shows up, there'll be 1,209 of them this week, which is a lot of seventh graders. So that's yesterday through Friday afternoon. On April 28th, it will be the annual Risky Business Conference. And again, if you're interested in attending that, all you have to do is go to the YSS website to register for that. And Doug Gentile is going to be one of our keynote speakers. Douglas Gentile is a professor at Iowa State. He is particularly renowned for his research on the impact that violent video games have on a developing brain. So I don't know if you've ever gotten a chance to hear him, but he is very compelling. He's an excellent, excellent speaker, and I'm glad that we are giving him his due. He's done some workshops for us in the past, but not everybody gets to that. And so I am personally glad that he's going to be the keynote so that everybody gets that message. I've heard him many times. I always learn a lot when he speaks. So just go for that if you can. Our Riskiest Business will be the 28th. The other thing is the ongoing issue with the e-cigarettes and the vaping devices that we're working with the city council with. And just to give you an idea, one of the things that we always look at with prevention is two things. You're always trying to prevent initial use. And so in the Iowa Youth Survey, one of the things that you look at is what is the onset of use for a given drug among young people. And so you're always trying to bump up the initial use because you're trying to get it farther and farther away from that sort of magical age of 15 where they are so much more likely to develop an addiction because of the plasticity in the brain and the likelihood the brain will look at that new sort of substance as normal. So you're trying to increase the onset of use. But if there is use, you're trying to mitigate the harm that it will do. So I'm going to in my bag. I have more for you. I forgot. One of the things that I want to present you with is an article from the Monitoring the Future study, which is something that is done by the University of Michigan every year with high school students across the country. Sponsored by the National Institute of Drug Abuse. And they look at several things. They look at all the different drugs, but what they do is they look at what do students perceive as harm from this given drug? What is their perception of harm? What is their perception of approval or disapproval? So do they think their friends would approve of them using it or disapprove of it? Would their parents approve or disapprove? They also look at their perception of availability. How easy do they think it is to get? Because if they think it's pretty easy, then why not give it a try? And then they look at actual use. Does that use go up or down? And when perception of use is high, or a perception of harm is high, the use always goes down. When perception of disapproval is high, use always goes down, despite availability. It can be right there, and they are not as likely to use it. Now, the tricky part, of course, is trying to get teenagers to think that anything will actually harm them or that anybody actually thinks anything but wonderful things about them. So you have to hit pretty hard in those kinds of things. And you don't necessarily use scare tactics to do that, but you want to make sure that you have information that you present to them that is very compelling and very accurate because they can look at the Internet, too. Now, part of what we try and do with prevention is you can't control for that. But one of the things you can do with prevention policy is increase the perception of harm by having policies in place that essentially say, we don't want you to have this because we think it is dangerous. We make, you know, drinking against the law for anyone under 21 because we recognize that is particularly dangerous for young people. We don't let you drink and drive because we know that that is particularly dangerous. We want to increase the perception of disapproval, again, by making it unavailable. You know, that as much as says, that's probably not a good thing. And to reduce what they see in terms of availability. I had a young person the other day say, I said, why do you think that people think that we should legalize marijuana? And he said, well, because everybody talks about it and everybody knows about it, so it must be okay. That's their perception. That's scary to me, but that's their perception. The more they see it in the public, the more likely they are to think, again, that harm goes down. So all of those things play together in sort of a Venn diagram to make it more likely or less likely that a young person is going to use. So part of what we're trying to do with the vaping ordinance with the city of Ames is if you can reduce the public spaces that it is being used, then young people are less likely to see it. It doesn't cover everything. But again, you're trying to do what you can in the places that you can do it. By making it even more against the law, than it is just for them to own it. Again, that sends a perception of harm because laws speak to whether something is harmful or not. Can you reach in my bag? I'm sorry, and get those articles. Sorry. So to that end, one of the things that we want to be able to do for the Board of Health is provide you with what we find is the most recent research that speaks to that. And the one, two, basically three articles that you are getting now have to do with the increase that we are seeing with young people because of their reduced perception of harm. One is the most recent research by the Monitoring the Future Survey, and the other speaks to one that was put out by the CDC that speaks to pulmonary inflammation from the use of these, something that is even more critical in developing lungs than it is in, say, old people's lungs, not that it's good for old people's lungs. So to that end, we have a request, a suggestion, something that we're thinking about that we would like to you to also contemplate. And for that, I need Brian to speak.
Okay. If you just introduce yourself for us when you sit down.
Good afternoon. My name is Brian Vanderheiden. I'm the co-chair of the Astoria County Prevention Policy Board. This board works to identify and address issues that impact health and safety of Astoria County residents. And we're particularly focused on substance abuse by young people and encourage strategies that may intervene in those behaviors that can result in acute and long-term negative health consequences. And we know that the research is becoming clear that the use of e-cigarettes and other vaping devices is an emerging drug of abuse, the exposure of which can have particularly harmful impact on children and teens. So we're here to encourage the Board of Health to consider joining other boards of health in Iowa and throughout the nation in using their authority to ban the use of these products from all Story County facilities. This ban can serve to safeguard the health of Story County employees who might otherwise be exposed to dangerous particulates that have been shown to cause pulmonary inflammation. Just as importantly, such a policy could serve to send a message that exposure to these products is not compatible with the Iowa Smoke-Free Air Act legislation, which has served to support the health of all citizens. So again, we request that the Board of Health look to initiate a ban on e-cigarettes and other vaping devices that would create an alignment between Iowa Smoke-Free Air Act and all of the Story County properties.
Thank you.
Yep.
I have a question. Okay, so right now, any age person can buy an e-cigarette.
No, if you're over the age of 18.
Okay. So it appears to me that the states that allow marijuana, that what other four or five?
Four. In District of Columbia.
So the marijuana, that's marijuana that they can smoke, right? So is this concentrated legal as well as the smoke type? So doesn't any form of marijuana, if it's legal, it can be whatever, even this concentrated? Okay.
Any other questions? Thank you. Looks like next, Mary Greeley Home Health. Eileen Mullen. How are you today, Eileen?
Eileen Mullen. Hello. I have passed out, I think, everything that I'm going to speak of nearly. You have the budget report. This is for half a year, July through the end of December. We will be able to use all of our grant dollars, I'm positive, by the end of the fiscal year. You'll see that on disease outbreak, on the, we've used 68%. We have had a lot of communicable disease and follow-up this year so far. So we are using that money pretty heavily already. And the last page is a summary of our grant, or our CDS Helps, which is our coalition for disasters between Boone and Story County. You'll see under PHEP, which is Public Health Emergency Preparedness, as opposed to HPP, which is the hospital preparedness component, that the remaining balance under Story County Public Health, which is halfway down, remaining balance after February expenditures is $41,751 and some cents. I have, that's quite a bit of money to spend yet, and we have a lot of stipulations on how we can spend that. They like IT, computer-related things, and I'm working with Mary Greeley's computer information team to see if we can't get some kind of use this money so that we'd be able to use Wi-Fi and I'm not really good on all this, but throughout the county if there was an emergency. So they're working on how they might be able to spend that money. But I'm getting a little concerned because we have to have the way we spend the money approved and spent by the end of June. I've also reached out to Keith and asked him to be looking at ways that we can spend dollars as well. And so hopefully I can report when I come back that we have spent this money. It would be a terrible shame not to be able to use it. So if any of you have some ideas, just in case any of these fall through, please don't hesitate to let me know. You also have in front of you a disease surveillance sheet that has disease surveillance in front of it. That just tells you some of the activity that the public health nurses have had in the January and February. Senior health clinics, surveys, we're going to be starting that pretty soon. That's just something we've created, and we send it out to our clients that come to Senior Health so that we can see how they feel that we are doing. So I'll let you know how that goes. And our mental health clinics, we continue to see clients in our office until there are some changes with the mental health component. Wanted to let you know that we are going to be applying again for the Healthcare Coalition grant dollars so that we can continue to be the fiscal agent for the Boone and the Story County Public Health Emergency Coalition. So we're in the process of doing that right now. And the last thing that I was just going to mention, and Denise has already pointed out, the county health rankings. And I sent you guys an email that has where you can drill down as well through that email to find out how Story is compared to other counties. And just in health outcomes in general, we do rank number 5 out of 99 counties. And there is a group of us in the counties working on our community health needs assessment. What we will do for this next one is due in February of 2016. And we are definitely utilizing the contents of this to help us identify where we need to hone in our efforts. And I'll just point out, probably if you look down this page that I handed out, physical environment is probably our most opportunity, according to this, within the county, which speaks to air pollution, drinking water, and severe housing problems, and driving alone to work, and so forth. Kind of interesting. It'd be drill down on that and see what the details of it are. That is all I have, unless anyone has any questions of me. Yes, John.
If the governor does as he proposes to close these two mental health facilities, how is that going to affect Story County?
You know, it'll affect all of us because we got to have places.
Where are these residents going to go?
Exactly.
Do we have a projection how many Story County residents are in these two facilities?
No, I'm not able to answer that. I just don't have that much knowledge of the mental health. I think that obviously it would be an issue for us. So I don't have those details. Sorry.
Any other questions for Eileen?
Go ahead. Sorry. I was just curious, on the salmonella cases, were those children or were they adults? Or do you know?
I will email you and let you know that.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
That takes us to Story County Environmental Health. Margaret James.
I can give you a spoiler alert. I've already heard this morning, so just fasten your seat belts.
I know.
Afternoon. Margaret with the Environmental Health Department. I'll start with the septic numbers. For 2015, we've started doing site reviews and issuing permits. We've had 7 new permits or applications come in, 2 repairs, and 11 time of transfer inspections. New house starts. One for this year, although there's been several outbuildings that have come in for planning and development. At the Iowa conference, I talked to some engineers and I decided to increase the application rate so the mounds will decrease in size by about 17%. For well numbers, grants to counties, we have about $22,000 still to spend. I don't think we're going to be able to spend that. We just can't find all the plugged wells and plug them. I think we're getting to them all. Maybe I don't know why it's so difficult anymore. Let's see. So, 1 well plugging, 1 well rehab, 17 water tests, and 7 time of transfer inspections. Permits, we've had 5, one of which was water. For our lead inspection program, I have 8 open cases, and then the most recent elevated blood lead case had been cleared for the HUD lead grant for remediation for interior and exterior lead hazards. So they've sent out their inspectors, and they retest all the paint for lead. They do a lot more extensive testing than is required for EBL and confirm that there are lead hazards in and out. So that's a really good deal for that family. They'll only have to pay, I think, 10% of total cost of the lead hazard reduction. For our pool tattoo and tanning programs, Matt and Kathy have been busy on this. For pools, there's been 8 pools that have been inspected, 2 closed for water quality, water chemistry violations, and 5 spas were inspected, 2 were closed that were adjoining the pools. Since then, both pools have been reopened and 1 spa has been reopened. For tattoos, we have 1 new facility in Ames that does makeup only. We have done 6 full inspections and 1 re-inspection. Most of them seem to be in compliance. For tanning, we've administered 3 tests and inspections will be starting soon. We get calls on occasion from operators when the state will send them letters saying that they haven't gotten their certification or this or that, and then they put our phone number down as a contact. So we have to answer for them why something has been goofed up. So we're going to have to get that squared away because it's their responsibility to do the licensing, but our responsibility to do the inspections and too many cooks in the kitchen kind of thing.
What kind of tests? You say you've administered.
Written tests, open book written tests, or multiple choice.
Did the proposed law pass that Herman had about the tan under 18?
Oh, I don't think it did. Did it even hit the funnel? I doubt it, huh? Yeah, I haven't either.
So.
Good question. Yeah, I don't know. Alluvial Brewery. This was, a change to the conditional use permit that planning and development issues. And it's part of the Prairie Moon Winery. Thank you. Such a headache, I can hardly think. To add this brewery. And so when we were planning with them a year ago, DNR said that they would need engineered plans and a DNR permit. And then, so just this past month, I requested copies of those from DNR, and they said, what brewery, basically. And so so they sent down a field investigator and learned that they are up and running, and they decided that what they're doing is okay, but they want us, the Environmental Health, to go back and do a permitting for a system that's already in, basically. It will be land applied. I do not have a problem with that. I don't know if there will be odor issues that the neighbors might complain about because they are close to Squaw Valley there. So we'll have to deal with that when it comes up. The issue with DNR on farm food processing versus all the products, all the produce not coming from the same farm determines whether or not they would be a DNR thing versus a county thing. We had the main office and then the field office calling it two different ways, and that's what caused the problem with the permitting from DNR. For enforcement, we have 5 outstanding time of transfer binding agreements, 0 overdue.
Is the one?
Oh, and I changed this just this morning. I decided to knock out the, so it's actually 8 outstanding notice of violations. 6 septic, 1 well, 1 lead. So one of them for Crestview, they took care of this morning. So that's why it's wrong. And then 5 complaints in 2015 so far. Living conditions, and we reported that to Heartland Senior Services, and they got right on it. It really worked well. Untreated sewage discharge, and that was a rural situation. Abandoned building, I'll talk about that in a minute. 5 alarm dog poop that came into our board of supervisors and then got passed down to our office. 5 dogs, 5 alarm, yeah. And then burning of yard waste at the Squaw Valley subdivision. And what they do, they have a lot that the homeowners association owns in common, and then everybody dumps all of their brush there. And then also people have been dumping solid waste, and they have been burning it on occasion. They cannot burn it there because it's not from that parcel that it grew on, so they can't do that. So Kathy's having them remove the solid waste, and then they'll just leave the rest of the stuff. As long as they don't burn it, that would be all right. So for the abandoned building, this was a complaint that came in a year ago, and then nothing was done, so the complaint came in again this year. And it triggered the need to address this abandoned building. We plan to control burn it, and so they, because they're a single-family unit, they do not have to test for asbestos. You just assume if you have asphalt shingles that you have asbestos in there, so you have to try to remove them. The problem with this house is that it's too dangerous. You can't get any equipment or people up on that roof to get them off because it'll fall in on them. So I think they're going to kind of just let them burn it. The fire folks are going to let them burn it and then try to salvage any part of that, the shingles that are left, and bury them or haul them off. And I helped Patricia Graham write waivers that have to go out to everybody within a quarter mile. She's getting them back. And then I talked to her today, and she's decided to get rid of that electrical meter. So hopefully this will happen sooner than later. So that's a good deal.
Is there any risk with moving those shingles?
Sorry?
If they let it burn and then move the shingles, is there any risk with that? Is that what the risk?
You know, there might be just the dust and that from that. I don't know if you could hose it down a lot, you know, just to keep the dust down and then move it. It is dangerous handling that material for sure, yeah, even before or after the fire. We've got our true angle equipment in, and Matt has been practicing on it some, and he'll teach Kathy and I how to use it. And then this will gather information, and then with software, transform it into a diagram of septic systems, so we won't have to spend as much time getting our field notes to paper so that we can get that out to our clients. So that'll be a real big efficiency improvement. And then I was saying this morning, Matt loves this stuff. You think it was Christmas when it came in the mail. I hate new electronic stuff because then it's a whole new thing to learn. So that's that. So ground has thawed pretty much. There on the north slope, there's still just a tidge of frost left. So we're going from the guy on the left there to the right. And I just wanted to say that I get the opportunity to meet a lot of really incredible people out in the field. It's just really fun. And this time of year, it's really fun because everybody's all zipped up about spring. And, yeah, so very cool. She wanted to show me her row crops that the neighbors was versus, no-till prairie setting and how the soil is different. So a lot of people really tuned into their environment and trying to do the right thing. It's way cool. Trainings and meetings, I'll just show them up there for everybody. Let's see, Matt attended the Coyotes class and he passed too. He didn't bring a sign or anything, Mark, but he did pass. So we're very proud of him. So now we all three have the Coyotes certification, which is also required of our contractors who are going to install or repair. This morning, Matt went out to the TJ CAFO site because during that master matrix review, we talked about possibly getting out there and doing some testing, and they were fine with that and welcomed us to come out to their farm. So Matt went out there, and this is a new tile there that Matt took a picture of. And then on the picture on the left, you can see that the box, that part that they included, they resurveyed, included in their property, is where the animal confinement is right now. And so, Matt, the picture on the right is located where on the picture on the left? You can see the creek in the green area there. Right about there. Okay. And then that goes under the road or toward the creek before it goes under the road? Okay. And the idea behind it is on those buildings, there are perimeter drains. And then those all come around and then go to that thing where we can collect samples if we need to. And then in that mat, right, there's a way to close that tile off in case there are bad numbers. We can close that off and figure out what's going on. So that's way cool. I mean, that's cool, I think. It's a step in the right direction. And then, Matt, can you tell everybody about the odor thing? I think that's an important thing to know, too. You want to come up here?
I guess standing out there, we started out where that tile is. I met Luke out there, and you wouldn't even know there was hogs out there until we went up to look where the septic was and everything, and until you were 10 feet from the building, you couldn't even smell them.
Well, I think that's the way they're designed to work that way. You know, obviously a lot of them don't, but, I mean, and you know, I think they try to improve the technology, but, you know, there's how many thousands of head of hogs in that building, yep. And they're going to smell. I mean, there's no way around that. If somebody can invent something to feed your hogs so their poop doesn't smell, you know, I'll buy stock in the company, but...
Luke is using, I'm not sure exactly what it is, but some additive that he adds to the pit. And he said he was at his dad's a month or so ago, whenever. And the wind was out of the west, and they got a little bit of a whiff of it. And his dad asked him if he had put the additive in that month, and Luke's like, no, I hadn't yet. So they did that, and 4 days later, smell was gone again. So.
I think the worst.
The worst odor is when they obviously when they clean the pit out.
Yeah.
And apply it. So.
Going back, you know, once in a while and just checking on that. Okay. There wasn't enough to sample today, so we'll go back after a bigger rain event. And then this reminds me to mention to the Board of Health that next week the Board of Supervisors are going to be talking about sort of changing the way of reviewing the master matrix. And instead of just our department, it will also include engineer, planning and development,
conservation.
Conservation.
I think the planning and development board, or planning and zoning board, or commission.
Planning and zoning board. Okay. So that's kind of a big change. And then the other thing is Dickinson County has asked all 98 other counties if the Board of Supervisors are interested in more local control for CAFOs that are going in, large enough that they would require a permit, so the master matrix review, okay? And so that will be discussed next Tuesday as well. And I was just wondering if the Board of Health had any input on it, if you feel like it would be important for our county to have more local control, or if you're okay with the way things are run now.
What it amounts to is a survey that they've sent out, and I think there's just the basic question is they would like to see more, or the master matrix amended or changed so it allows local boards more latitude on siting where these things can actually be sited. It came about because somebody was going to, I think there was a proposed facility that was going to go within. It wasn't very far from Lake Okoboji, I think, or one of the Great Lakes up there.
Oh, is that right?
And that's what brought this about.
Oh.
So they, you know, they're looking to see if there's other counties that are interested, and if they get enough interest, they'll take, they'll take it to the DNR and see if they can get them to, try to amend or adjust the master matrix process a little bit. So.
I think it's worth taking another look at it anyway.
So I think the Board of Supervisors, I think we'll probably have it on our agenda next week for discussion. Yep. The house in Nevada that you've had the lead problems with.
Yes.
Is that still
vacant?
Vacant. It's for sale. There's a sign on the side of it.
Oh, I didn't know that. Yeah.
It's just
it was a contract sale before, and the guy backed down, I believe. And now that Starbucks, the ice cream Starbucks is open, you can drive by that a little bit more often, right?
Exactly.
Check out that house to see if no one's living there.
I did notice, and I don't know if, maybe the last week or so, that there's just a hardware size for sale by owner sign.
Oh, I'll be darned.
Tacked up on the side of it, so.
Oh, thank you. I'll have to keep an eye on that because they do need to disclose that there's lead hazards when they sell it. That's a federal law.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. This part really bores me, but I got to run it past anyway. Public Health Accreditation Board standards. Okay. So I went to a workshop and listened to their ideas, and they incorporated. It's not with the government, but they incorporated in 2007. And like in, I think 2009, the state of Iowa wanted to see all local health departments become accredited. And they had a lot of classes in that I went to a few years back. And then we had a change in politics or change in policy. And they decided, no, that's not doable. And so now the Iowa Public Health Advisory Council recommends that we get the FAB accreditation instead of the state accreditation. And then so I asked how Story County would do it in a situation where, public health is contract and then environmental health is, staff. And they said, well, the Board of Health would be the lead agency. But I still think that was a really easy answer for a very difficult question, because how in a contract do you make somebody remain accredited, especially if we get a different contractor after a while, or, you know, something. It just makes it ours a lot more difficult, I think. There's a lot of paperwork involved with it. I think that what we are already doing now is exactly what we need to do, except not documented as well, you know. And I'm sure, Eileen, you've gone through some of these fun exercises. But and it all sounded pretty good. Linn County just recently was accredited, and they are the first county in the state of Iowa. So, but then the catch is this. Okay, so reaccreditation every 5 years, okay, and it's costly to do it and costly not to do it. Costly to the tune of application fee is around $13,000 for counties with 50,000 or less, and they didn't even come up with a number for counties our size, a little bigger than that. So it would be probably $16,000 maybe. Every 5 years we would have to pay that. The downside is that they anticipate, they didn't say for sure, but they anticipate grants being tied into accreditation requirements. So, you know, oh, they're tricky that way. So, you know, will it be worth our while to spend money and trouble to get accredited and get these grants, or just pass on these grants? I don't know. So, let's see. So there's a whole process you go through the pre-application, application, site visit. You know, it's a lot of work. It doesn't sound like any fun at all. And let's see. And these are the domains that, you know, just basically the 10 essentials that the public health had to deal with a few years ago. They just added a couple more. So anyway, that's coming down the pike. I just want you to think about that. Meanwhile, I think both departments are doing fine, doing what we need to do, and maybe we'll just start considering documenting and, you know, or tracking things, that kind of thing. You know, in Story County, it's kind of interesting. You both mentioned those studies. Story County, it's really hard to compare. It's always apples and oranges because we have that university population in there. So unless you're comparing to another university county, the numbers are really hard. It'd be really great if we could get numbers from the university so that we knew what we could subtract out and apply it to those numbers. I don't know if those numbers are available, but that's part of accreditation, is showing your needs and the China HIP and all that, and showing what you need to do to get to a certain point. So, and then back to the real world here. This morning I was down at Crestview Mobile Home Park to see how they're progressing on their cleanup. And I used a term this morning that it still looked a little tornadic there. and no, there was no tornado. So the mound, bottom left, you can see all those heavy, heavy tree stumps and logs have been moved off. I mean, they're scattered in huge piles throughout the mobile home park, but they are off the mound, so that can hopefully function. And then I counted 13 units that looked totally uninhabitable and need to be moved off. Now, our department has been working with the treasurer and planning and development and legal to they can't move them until they get the VINs and the junking certificates squared away. And then it's really hard to know when they're that old. Sometimes those are lost. You know, I wanted to move these off, but he can't move them off till he gets those numbers squared away, you know, and then it allows him to just keep pushing us in circles, you know. His deadline is April 13th to at least give us an inventory of all these with the numbers, and it's not looking real good for that. So we're not sure what we're going to do with this. But, you know, for their public health in their little, you know, environment, in their little world, it's really not fair. They pay rent, and they have to live in really rough conditions here. Okay, and then for wrap up, a few little things going on. Cameron Estates, up off of Cameron School Road, that construction is beginning. We've had some geothermals and septic going in. And then I also did a Crestview Public Water Supply inspection. And then I I emailed DNR, I emailed Ames asking if they would be willing to be a backup water source in case their well goes down, and they have shown no interest yet. They're talking about it, they said. I did the budget hearing and budget amendment was submitted a couple weeks ago, and that covered like the change in the grants to counties, the Hickory Grove money that came in, and the phone rang right there after True Angle. I didn't finish that slide. True Angle, but those kinds of things that we talked about already at the budget here, budget workshop, just to get those squared away and those numbers squared away for this fiscal year. Paul and I started doing, we did my performance evaluation, so now I will do my staff's. And then we held the Coyotes class and exam up at McFarland Park there, had somebody, a professor, come down from Minnesota to teach that. And almost everybody's up and running with the contractor requirement. And that's all I have. Any questions?
Nothing for Margaret.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Next is discussion and approval of the Board of Health success story. Eileen Mullen.
Yeah, well, this is your story. So Margaret submitted this to me, and I think it's a great story. The Board of every year, the contract for the local Board of Health contract, we need to submit certain items, and this is one of them, a Board of Health success story. And so this is what I'm asking, that if you approve of this story, that we send this in. And I think you've had a copy of it. It's, and if you have questions, Margaret's here to answer them. But it was Hickory Grove Lake was it polluting. It had impaired. It was on the impaired list, waters 303 list for high bacteria counts. And it was mainly due to Canadian geese, livestock, and failing septic systems in the watershed. So the action was that the Board of Health, along with some others, secured some grant dollars for addressing the water quality problems, and the Board of Health focused on the failing septic systems. So an incentive package was developed offering grants that would cover 50% of the cost of a new septic system, up to $5,000. And it, the county also waived the permitting fees for conducting the soil studies and designing the systems. And interest in the program sounded like it was real impressive, a 90% interest. And when Margaret gave this to me, which was a while back, she said three systems had been replaced. Six were slated for replacement during the 2015 construction. And the impact on this is a reduction in the pollution. So I'd ask that the board would approve this. And if not, we'll come up with another story for you to approve of something you have done for the county. And this is an awesome. This is good.
I think it's a pretty good story. You worked with, in conjunction with conservation, with Mike Cox, to secure the grant money, and then the Board of Supervisors put up. I can't remember how much money we. There was some. Was it last year or 2 years ago? We put money up.
It's like 13 for
systems. Okay, so, yeah, I mean, we didn't really see any other way that it was gonna. I mean, it wasn't going to fix itself. And then we had a meeting, was it a year ago, out at Hickory Grove Lake with the property owners about, and talked to them about the program, and it actually worked pretty good. They kind of organized amongst themselves and said, hey, if we all go together, we can, you know, get a hold of the same contractor and see if he can give us a good rate, and then somebody can, I think somebody had an outlet they could buy some of the supplies, I think, at a discount or something, so... So, yeah, I think it was a pretty successful story. So if you guys, somebody would like to make a motion, we can take action on that, and then Eileen can submit that on our behalf.
I'll motion to approve.
Second.
We have a motion to and a second to approve this success story. Is there any other questions or comments? All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, the same sign. That passes.
Thank you.
You bet. Thank you. Well, it'll be interesting to see how many people we get to take advantage of that lead grant program. So that could be, you won't have to worry about it next year, though. That'll be somebody else's. Exactly. The next is our ordinance consideration to require property owners to disclose septic condition when applying for county permits. And that, again, is Margaret.
I had a few more slides and I went and erased them right before I came up, so I don't have them. So, but anyway, I think in front of you, you have, you didn't pass it out. This is it. Yeah, that's it. So that, yeah, I don't, you didn't leave it on. Sorry. So do they have the most
yep.
recent draft? Okay. Of the, so you remember we did a little pilot project for about a year. To see if it worked. I think it does. I think, it didn't have as big an impact as I thought. The numbers weren't real high. But we got a handful of folks that didn't have a system, and now they do. Kicking and screaming, now they do. So I would like to see this go into an ordinance. Jessica, legal staff, recommended that we put it in ordinance form because it's more enforceable that way. Okay. I did add a few more things from the pilot project on that list of folks that would need to comply with this. We added the subdivision, the planning and development subdivisions, planning and development variance, and then something that's been totally excluded, but I would like to exclude, is the plat of survey reviews. And what that is, that's what this photo is about. So the recorder's office gets about 150 documents per year that come in for a plat of survey, so a change in the survey. And so out of 150, about a half of them are rural properties. Oftentimes, they're just vacant land and doesn't really impact septic systems or not. But sometimes, and this is a true and actual case, they will come in and survey off the home area, the building area, and the farm property, and turn that into two parcels instead of one parcel, okay? And then it goes around to all the different departments at the county for their review and input. And so we look at it for septic, for example. So if they have a system and the laterals are across the boundary for where that split is, then we make a comment, and sometimes they'll adjust their line or easement. Thank you. An easement. And that's going okay. But the issue with this is requiring these folks to do a disclosure. So, for example, if the survey crew submitted this and it was supposed to be a split of two into two parcels, we would pull the file and see if there's a septic permit and diagram on that house right there. In this case, there was not. Okay? But we just have to, we can't do anything about it at this point. What I would like to do is require them to disclose that information, what their septic system is, just like the rest of the folks in that list. Okay.
Because why are they doing that split? Do you know?
Usually because they want to sell it off or sell off, stay living where they're at and sell the farmland or sell both pieces. Lots of times it's an estate and the kids are, things are progressing with the estate. Things like that. So sometimes it would sell, and then we would catch it that way if it wasn't in that list of exemptions. Lots of times the family stays right where they're at and continue to not have a septic system. Charlie brought up the point of the... you read that email.
Home business.
Home, no. homestead tax credit.
Oh, correct.
With the assessor's office. And I talked to the assessor, Wayne Schrickerath, and he didn't think it was a good idea at this time to do that because it's a state form and it's just really complicated. And I don't think there would be a lot coming in from that anyway because most of them have just recently sold and we would have caught them under the time of transfer. Okay, so I chose not to include that in the draft. But this one, I still think there's ample opportunity to catch some folks that need to have their system upgraded. So today I ask that you consider this and vote on it. And if you're, you know, first of all, make the changes, include, exclude what you want. And then vote whether or not you think this should be an ordinance. And if the vote is yes, then I will bring it forward to the Board of Supervisors.
Yeah, it was Jessica's suggestion because we had talked about implementing
it as a policy,
as a formal. Because we'd never, since it was a pilot program, we'd never actually introduced it as a formal policy.
Mm-hmm.
And her suggestion was, if you're going to do it as an ordinance. That way, you can enforce it. But that's my question. Do we need to have any language in here about enforcement? Yeah, I don't know what. I would think it would be like any other, county ordinance that we'd have. We'd have to have an enforcement, and we can talk to Jessica about that.
Yeah, well, she mentioned that if you just leave it like that, then it kind of assume that there's penalties involved in this and that if you don't follow if you break the ordinance.
Okay. And is there?
He asked if I wanted specific language about penalties and enforcement and that on that. I thought, well, if we have it on this one, then we'd have to have it on all of them. So let's just,
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, like this one, if it didn't have a system at all,
mm-hmm.
then where is it going? It's going into a tile.
Yeah, we know where. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
That's right.
Good
yeah.
Lord,
that's right. So I think it's time. This is 2015, and. It's a lot of the houses are turn of the century,
right.
It's time.
One other question, but I can't remember what it was.
So, basically what it amounts to is if this board wants to recommend to the Board of Supervisors that they pass it as an ordinance, then the Board of Supervisors will go through the process. We have to publish it, and we have to do three readings, have a public hearing, and we just do those in conjunction with our regular Board of Supervisor meetings on Tuesday. We would have a public hearing and then three opportunities for anybody to speak about it. And then if we pass it, it becomes a county ordinance.
Right.
So,
some people might think it's, the government reaching a little too far. Maybe it is. I don't know. But for water quality, I recommend that it be passed.
And these three, the last three things were added, so we didn't actually do those for the pilot.
Correct.
So these would be new?
Correct.
Okay. All right. And you've had discussions with the recorder
mm-hmm.
about
mm-hmm.
it?
Yep.
And
they're in favor of it, yes. Definitely in favor of it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, even something like this, even if it's unintentional, and, somebody retires from farming and they sell the farm ground and keep the acreage, and lo and behold, they figure out that, 5 years down the road that their laterals are on the ground that they sold.
Yeah,
chances are you wouldn't have any problems, making repairs or fixing it. But if, something's happened in that time period, you're not getting along with the new landowner,
mm-hmm.
So.
And eventually it's going to be sold to somebody else. So.
Right.
So they'll have to do it anyway.
Right.
Yeah, unless it's an exemption.
Right. Yeah, so in order for us to move it up to the Board of Supervisors, we'll need a motion and approval from this board.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, we've got a motion and a second to recommend approval of the ordinance to the Board of Supervisors for our septic disclosure. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. That passes.
Very good. Thank you so much.
So will you put it on next week or are you going to wait?
I think I probably have to have Jessica really look at it one more time a little
okay.
closer.
Well, we have to publish.
And then publishing.
Right.
Yeah, so it
okay.
won't be able to go on next
right.
agenda.
Okay.
But I would really have her look Yeah. Do we need a penalty clause at the bottom of this? You
know, okay, sure. Yeah.
It's not much good having a rule unless there's some way to enforce it.
And I think that was kind of her recommendation as opposed to a policy. Because if it's just a policy, there's no enforcement. You can't take enforcement action.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then the question I was going to ask you was the binding agreement. I mean, do we give them a length of time?
It depends on where you're hitting the season, the construction season. So
okay, you know, so it's.
But we can do it all year round, and then like in winter, we would say by June 1st have your system in. We give them ample time.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
One thing, you know, I should have mentioned, we've talked with Charlie with planning and development about this, and he's actually not fond of having specific ordinance for this because he feels it will discourage applicants to planning and development. But my argument was he wanted just a general ability for our department to enforce that. But my argument is if you enforce it with this specific ordinance or a general ordinance, it would result in the same folks wanting to participate or not participate in
right.
their application process through planning and development. So I don't think it really impacts that. This brings it right to the front, and they don't feel like they're being trapped into, you know, they need to know everything they need to know. So if they want to stop with the application right up front and not even deal with us, then they need to know that right up front, I think.
Right.
Right? So so I went forward with this, but I wanted Charlie's concerns to be known.
And he did have concerns about the home business permit.
Mm-hmm.
If, you know, he said if he thinks that maybe we run the risk that somebody would not come to get the permit. They'd just go ahead and, you know, run their business out of their home without the permit, as opposed to having to go through this. But we can have him as part of our discussion at the
supervisor meeting.
When
absolutely.
We bring that up. So, okay. Anything else? Next is the discussion and approval of the implementation of the septic information system. Matt Corey. Exactly.
Just continuation of the last time, what I showed you, the website for the pumpers. I had a meeting yesterday with the IT staff and took care of some of the behind-the-scenes issues and stuff. And basically, I haven't sent Jessica an email yet about it, but I guess need a little more direction on exactly what you're wanting from her.
Okay. I think just run the concept past her, and if she doesn't have any, if it doesn't raise any red flags with her, and I think if IT's satisfied, I would assume that she's going to be.
Yep.
Her concern is going to be any potential liability that, you know, that the county could face as a result of this.
Yep.
So we just need approval for this. And I don't know if you guys can remember, he gave us a short demonstration last time about this. So if a pumper's out in the field on a holiday or a weekend or after hours, this is something that he can pull up on a smartphone or an iPad and show the diagram of the parcel that shows where the tank's at, so he's not out there for 2 hours with trying to witch the system or
mm-hmm.
find out where the tile locator.
Especially when the ground's frozen.
Exactly. So if there's no other questions, I would take a motion to approve that, implementing that system.
A motion to approve.
Second.
We have a motion and a second to approve the septic information system. Is there anything further? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. That's approved. Thanks, Matt. Next, comment section. Any comments from the staff? Any comments from, Margaret?
Well, you were going to.
We did. Oh, I talked to them. I handed them out.
Okay. Oh, okay.
And what we're going to do is they're going to look it over. If they have any questions or concerns, they'll get a hold of me.
Okay.
And then you and I will sit down again with if there is questions or comments. That way we're not going to have to go through
a closed session or do your evaluation in a public meeting. So,
that would be great.
Okay.
That would be great.
Okay. Yep. So any comments from board members?
I have one question.
Okay.
On the issue that YSS asked us to look at that.
Oh, the
e-cigarettes in Story right. County buildings.
Yeah.
What are we going to do with that?
Well, I don't think it's necessary. I think they're still looking for an overall ban.
I think that's good.
Well, I do too. And you know, we've had the discussion in the past, and I know that the city of Ames is more interested in it than they have been in the past. And I think I can't remember. I know it's been this year. I think they gave direction to their staff to look into it and bring a report back to the council. And my concern, and same with the Board of Supervisors, is if the Board of Health and the county passes that ordinance, that forces Ames to have to enforce the ordinance because we're not going to enforce it.
Well, that's okay. We need to.
Well, that's true, but it's, you know, it's the city of Ames, and, you know, we can take it up again, but, the board's had that discussion. The Board of Supervisors has had that discussion, and I don't think anything's changed to the point where we're going to, that the ordinance would pass the way it's presented.
So you don't think the supervisors would pass it?
No.
What, are they don't want to step on Ames's toes? Or?
No, because it's an enforcement, it would create an enforcement problem for Ames, the city of Ames. And if that's where it's going to have to be enforced, and I think that the Ames City Council is the one that needs to pass the ordinance as opposed to the county.
But when are they going to do that, you think?
Nothing moves rapidly. I mean, it was over a year for the e-cigarette ordinance for sale to minors. So, but the one thing that is interesting is the use of them in county buildings. You know, I don't. You know, we've got a policy where you can't smoke on county property in any county vehicles. But as far as I know, there's nothing in there that would prohibit you from using an e-cigarette. So that's something that we'll probably have to look at. So,
okay.
Why's everybody looking at Matt? Yeah. Great. Okay. Anything further for the board? So do you ever get the agenda ahead of time?
Well, I got it after I
okay.
Krista sent it to me.
Separately, he asked for the attachments in a separate email. Are
okay.
you not able to use the link? Are you
oh.
set up for notify me?
Right. Well, I just didn't know when it's on the link when we if
okay.
we can be notified when it's up there.
Okay.
Go
so
to the link,
I'm going to make sure that you are set up for the notify me. So
okay, yeah,
I will do that, and you will get an email that you'll have to open.
That's fine.
And click on the confirmation.
Right. Yep.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
We'll
as soon as the agenda gets posted on our website.
Yeah, that's what I do. I get an email, and then I go to this page and I download it as a PDF. And then
I guess I never
PDF,
got an email
get
knowing when it was there.
Okay.
So
and everybody should have already been signed up for the notify me. All those instructions were given
yeah.
a year ago.
Okay.
You may need some remedial help.
Yeah, I would.
I wasn't going to say that.
I would rather just get the agenda but not have to go through all that.
Yeah. And sometimes, I know, because I, at our Board of Supervisors meetings, I use an iPad instead of printing everything out. I just use an iPad.
Right.
And if I go to the county's website and open that on my iPad, I can't open the attachments. But if I open the email that I, when they send, you know, Shelly sends us the, when I, if I open it from that, then I can open up the attachments on my iPad. But if I pull it off the website, I can't open the attachments. No. As long as it works one way or the other, I'm going to leave it at that. So, no, we're not doing that. So, okay, if there isn't anything further, I would take a motion for adjournment.
I move we close.
And don't fight over it.